Hello and welcome to the How Not to Screw Up Your Kids podcast. So, pour yourself a cuppa, find a comfy seat, and enjoy the conversation. This is episode 145, and today's episode, Do Timeouts Work? I'm tackling head on the challenge of what to do in the heat of the moment when our children make a poor choice. Do timeouts or naughty step work? And if not, what are the alternatives? Now, I came upon this sort of title and wanted to kind of do this. I had given a breakfast talk and I felt this question had come up and I felt that I hadn't really answered it particularly adequately. You know, afterwards when you reflect on something and you think, ah, I should have said this and I could have said that. So I wanted to do a more thorough job. So here we are. Now, my advice has always been not to use the naughty step for the simple reason that it takes a child who's experiencing some pretty big, sometimes scary feelings and emotions inside themselves, and it isolates them. Now, the reality is the naughty step is not typically used nowadays, certainly in a punitive punishment kind of way, and is in fact more like a timeout, which I actually don't have an issue with as long as it is used at the right time in the whole big feelings, poor choice process. So let me explain. Your four-year-old totally loses it. Substitute any age here. But they totally lose it because you said no, either to something they wanted or something that they wanted to do or something that they were doing that is not okay. So they are throwing toys, they're screaming, they're crying, and they're not listening to anything you have to say. Now, an immediate time out removes the child from the situation, which clearly diffuses the meltdown for anyone else who's around at that time, instantaneously. You kind of move it away. Now, the meltdown may then continue, but it is isolated to the space where the timeout happens, as well as the big sensations in their body. They're worked through on their own, as well as potentially any internal dialogue, which could turn into a sort of a bit of an internalization that they're a bad person. We've all been there. We've all heard our child say that they're naughty and they're bad. And for some children, it does give them an opportunity to have space to themselves, which potentially could be seen as good. When we have a delayed timeout, what happens is it gives us time to acknowledge the emotion. It's this whole notion of name it to tame it. When we label an emotion, whether our children do it or whether we do it for them, we take that emotion from that amygdala, primitive emotional brain, and we move it round to more of the logical problem solving part of our brain, our prefrontal cortex. The meltdown continues in situ, obviously, because they've not been removed from the situation. And so everyone can be pretty much trapped by it. The big sensations in our children's body and potentially the internalization, the internal dialogue, monologue that occurs, can then have, we're then on hand to reassure. And also we're then able, with a delayed timeout, it's an opportunity to reflect on what they may do differently next time. And it can be seen as instructive and problem solving rather than punitive. With those sort of two different examples of what happens when we do an immediate timeout and when we do a delayed timeout, is my overall view is use timeouts at the right time with the right intention and sparingly. And I say this because the research is pretty clear. Timeouts work in the short term, because what happens is in lots of ways we somewhat startle or shock the child, not because we're shouting, but it sort of disrupts what's happening. And so in that moment, so it can be helpful in the short term, but the behavior does return at the same rate afterwards. So it's not a method that is instructive long term. So if we want behaviours to change longer term, so absolutely use timeouts in that short term because they can be really helpful, particularly when we've got a situation that's fast escalating, either with our children on their own or whether they're siblings that are interacting in it as well. But if we really want the behaviours to change longer term, we have to adopt a longer term education and root cause piece. I'll talk you through my five top tips in terms of tackling this really, just not just in the heat of the moment, but really looking at it from the whole sort of package, if nothing else. The fifth tip I will give you is what to do in the immediate. But for me, if we want to tackle this long term, I want you to look at the whole thing. So that's what I'm going to be sharing with you today. So let's start with tip number one. Number one is really crucial that we understand the driver behind the behavior, and particularly if we are getting the same type of behavior on a regular basis. So obviously, if your child just has one major tantrum, one major blowout, and it's very unusual to their temperament, 100%, go ahead, use the timeout process. I'll share the specifics in tip five. But more often than not, that there'll be certain patterns. It may well be that our child becomes quite overwhelmed and their default is to scream or to shout or to melt down in terms of tears, or it may well be that they get particularly physical. So really what we're trying to do is really think broader about how can we be instructive as well as use the timeout when we need to. So we want to try and do really understand what could be driving this behavior. Is it a difficulty articulating their feelings? Is it that they don't have the language, you know, available to them to be able to express themselves? Do they feel a lack of autonomy? Is there a jealousy going on? Is their confidence being slightly, are there issues around their confidence? Is it frustration? You know, there can be so many aspects to this that really, when we're dealing with just the timeout or just the behavior in the moment, we're always in that situation. We're always on that back foot and always responding in that moment rather than taking that step back and looking at the much broader picture. And that's what that does. So one of the things that I find really helpful is to try the ABC audit for a week. And the ABC is just simply A is for antecedent, B is for behavior, C is for consequence. So if you are finding that you're getting these big outbursts, what we want to look at is A, what was happening just before they had their big meltdown, or they had their tantrum, or they started screaming, or they started pushing their sibling over. Then B is the behavior, C is the consequence. And the consequence isn't what we do to what we sort of try and instruct our child as the consequence for the choice they've made, but much more, what does my child get as a result of that behavior? So do we stop what we're doing in order to deal with it? Does their sibling react in a particular way? Do we then respond in a particular way? So we really want to think through what that might look like, because it's that whole knowledge is power. And if we understand that sequence of what might be going on before, what happened, what the consequence, what our child gets from it, it helps us. Now, you know, it won't change how best to respond to your child in the moment, but what you may have is some supplementary work that you need to do beyond that. So clearly there is the behavior that our children make in that moment that we have to respond to. But if underlying all of that is a communication deficiency or a jealousy or a inability to self-regulate, then we have to deal with what happens in the moment. But we also have to run concurrently with that a piece of supplementary work. So that's number one, is that we really want to understand the driver. And of course, if you're anything like me, you hear stuff and then you want to jump in and start trying and working on things. And of course, you can do that when I give you tip number five about how to actually manage it in the moment. But it really is worth taking that broader view, because it really helps, because it means that the concurrent pieces that you do will really address the root cause. And you know, if we're finding that timeouts are working, we want to use them sparingly. And if we can get to that root cause as well, we can be up and running and effective much more quickly. So that's number one. Number two then is, once we've done that audit, we then need to add in or address anything which your child may perceive as lacking. Now I say this, and that can be lacking within you in terms of the way that you are, either in the moment or just generally, them, or both. So that's what we want to add in. And remember, we have to remember, and I get asked about this quite a lot, is this idea that, you know, we can be saying our children, I give them, you know, so much time and so much attention. I don't understand. I'm saying this with love. It is not that you are not giving them time, and it's not that you're not giving them attention. But if their lens through which that they're looking on the world is, my parent is spending more time with my younger sibling or my older sibling or with their work or whatever it is, we have to remember it's the lens with which our child views the world. It doesn't have to be accurate. It doesn't have to be real. It's how they perceive it. And so that's what we may need to address. And that should show up in the ABC. If we've got a child who's maybe struggling with their communication, so their thought processes are there, but they're not able to articulate it, it may well be, particularly with really young children, it may well be one way to address that is to come up with some signs or use sign language as ways for them to be able to communicate what they need. If there's a difficulty in terms of self-regulation and their emotions, we may need to be adding on a piece of regular work around adding to their emotional vocabulary, talking about a toolkit, helping them understand how emotions show up in their body. If there's a jealousy piece, you've got a new young child, or you've got a child that requires more time from you because of their needs, whatever those might be, age, stage of development, then again, we might need to be addressing conversations around different, you know, children needing different aspects of our time, and maybe dedicating some very specific time to the child who's struggling with their big emotions as a way of helping them connect. So it's really looking at what that might be. It may well simply be that when we look at the ABC, it relates to how we're self-regulating because we're feeling overwhelmed. We're feeling like we've got a million and one things that we're doing and we're not taking care of ourselves. So the add-in or the thing that we need to address is actually about our own self-care. So really look at it broadly and with that open mind. So the first one is understanding the driver behind the behavior. The second is we add in or we address anything which shows up from that audit. I'm super excited to announce that tickets are now live for my inaugural It Takes a Village to Raise a Resilient Adult conference. This is an in-person event and I cannot wait to meet so many of you there. This conference is for you if you are a parent who wants to raise a resilient adult. If you're a teacher, an educator, a nanny, a therapist, an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, or anyone who's invested in raising the next generation of resilient adults. Head over to the website, link in the show notes, where you can buy your tickets now. The third one is work on removing our big emotions from the situation, as this will stop escalating things. So if self-care does not come up as the thing that you need to add in, then it is definitely something that you need to consider in step three. Often, you've no doubt heard the term about when children become dysregulated. So when our children experience a big emotion, and it's big and it's huge to them because they're living their life in the present. Children don't have the same ability, and particularly when they're young, about this notion of delayed gratification. I want it and I want it now. And so everything that we say no to or we can't do or whatever they might be feeling then carries a huge amount of weight. It's quite, you know, it's really intense for them. So their emotional dysregulation and that turmoil, and think about a glitter jar with glitter going all over the place, yeah, and swirling around. That's how it feels when they experience a big emotion. That needs to be met by us being emotionally regulated in that moment for as many times as we can possibly do. We are never, ever going to do it 100% of the time, because our children will always, at some point and many times, press a button, trigger something in us, be at the moment when we are at our least resourceful, at our least calm, at our most stressed. So we are going to have periods of time where we're going to shout and we're not going to respond as best we can. But I do think that we need to be mindful of addressing and removing our big feelings in that moment and using few words. It's not about sort of being cross, but it's just about adopting an approach that tends to be much more matter of fact. And I'll talk you through how we do that in the moment so that we remove our emotion from the language that we use for our children, and that we look at their response from the lens of not the behavior, but the emotion behind it. You know, the child that's feeling isolated, the child that's feeling overwhelmed, the child that's feeling, in their view, neglected, overlooked. Doesn't have to be true. It's just simply how they're viewing it in that moment. So it's really working on removing our big emotions. And that might mean sometimes that we say to our children, I'm really cross and I can't, we'll talk about this later. You know, keeping everybody safe, making sure that there's going to be no harm done to anyone, and then returning back when we're feeling more emotionally regulated ourselves. So the first is understanding the driver behind the behavior. The second one is adding in or addressing anything that may be lacking in that situation. The third is working on removing our big emotions. The fourth one is about being super, super clear in our communication about the distinction between the behavior and our children's character. And we'll see this. So some of you will be listening to this and knowing that you have a child who will always then internalize, you know, I'm a bad person. Look what I did. I've upset everyone. You know, and for some children that language becomes quite extreme. I don't deserve to be here. And that's heartbreaking when our children say that. So we have to make sure that when we're having those conversations with our children, and in particularly because these are high heat, high emotion moments, is that we really try and communicate that distinction between the choice that they made of that behavior in that moment and who they are as a person. And we've all read the sort of the books that talk about, you know, you're not naughty. That was, you did something naughty. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of using naughty anyway as a language, but you know what, you'll get what I mean. It's simply this, the choice that they made in that moment. And I'll address that in the example that I give you. But it's really trying to make sure that we're super, super mindful. And if we haven't, you know, if in that moment we've lost it and we've said things that we wish we hadn't said, and we've said something that they may interpret as part of their character rather than being isolated to the behavior, then we can still remedy that later. You know, it doesn't, I think we often worry as parents that once we've said something and put it out there, that that's it, we can't unravel it. And of course we can't unsay it, we've said it, but we can remedy it by going and having a conversation with our children afterwards, having that kind of discussion around, you know, I said, and that really wasn't what I meant. And that's a great way of modeling to our children how we can make good, how can we reflect on choices that we've made in those moments and how we can remedy it. And that may well be an episode in itself. Let me know if you think that that's something, if you're often guilt-ridden about things that have happened that you'd like to make good and you don't always know how to do it, and particularly any specific situations, write in contact@drmaryhan.com. And I will then make sure that we do another episode that's just on that remedying. So that's number four. It's about being super, super clear in our communication about the distinction between the behavior and the choice that they made in the moment and who they are as an individual. So they don't see that as part and parcel of who they are, just a choice that they made in that moment. Number five, I want to talk you through what I would recommend that you do in the moment and how you might then choose to use the timeout. So what we want to do is we want to acknowledge, really focus on acknowledging the emotion behind the behavior, because what that's also really good is that means that the way that we approach and speak to our child and our behavior is always coming from that compassionate, okay, you've made a poor choice, but the emotion is valid behind it. So that you can say something around something like, we can all get angry, we can all get mad when things don't go our way, but it's not all right to throw things. So we've acknowledged the emotion. We've given them a label for it. That's the name it to tame it. Yeah. Yeah. But we've said, you know, but it's not all right to throw things. You didn't make a good choice. Yeah. So we've made it really clear what it is that they haven't made a good choice. We can then, it's really crucial, we reassure our children that we still love them, that they're a good person. And then we allow the time out before we then regroup to talk about what might have been a better option to use next time or what they might try next time. So let's not tell them that they need to use the time to think about what they've done, because we've already told them. Yeah, we've already told them that they made a poor choice, and we don't want to get caught in the I'm a bad person narrative. So we've explained that they can, that they've got angry, and we all do, that they've made a poor choice in that throwing. So there's, and in my view, when we're talking about time out, there is no need to send them anywhere. Our children don't need to be sent to another space. We want to reassure them that they're okay. We want to help them work through the feeling if that's what they need. And then we want to remove ourselves and give them no further time and attention. The time out, in essence, is a time where there's no interaction and no attention from us, even if our children are trying to suck us back in. So what's a good thing to do when we're saying that we're then going to have that time out is to be really clear that we're all having time out and that there's going to be no discussion about things until a specific agreed time. And we need to also communicate how we will let them know when that time is up. Because obviously, if we're communicating this with a really young child, they're not looking at a clock. Yep. So we might agree that the time out is when I come back in, or time out is when I say, when we sit down and have a snack. But giving them some clear marker about when they will know that that time out, and this is all something that we need to say in advance, so that when we then withdraw the speaking, when we then withdraw the attention, we're not getting sucked into having to answer or clarify something. So we just want to say, this is what's going to happen. There'll be no conversation in order to make sure that we all get this time out, maybe reflect on what we might do differently and clarify that they understand that that's what is going to be the case. Obviously, we've got to adapt and modify our language to the age and stage our child is in. We're really young children. We just simply say time out. And then we just don't give them any more time and attention. Older children, we can explain that there's a time out and it will be back time in at this marker, whatever that might be. And obviously with even older children, we can be really specific around timings. So when that time is up, we want to go back to the incident immediately and discuss options for next time. We don't want to protract this out. So it's best to, we've given them the timeout because it was very specific to a specific pattern of behavior, a poor choice that they made. So we need to revisit that so that we can then have that discussion and then move on. So we go back to the incident immediately. We discuss options for next time in a calm, almost matter of fact, not in terms of a dismissive, but we take our emotion out of it. We don't get in this like, why do you keep doing this? And this is not fair, not kind. But we're simply you made a poor choice. We can feel mad, but we just don't throw things. We don't push people. We don't say unkind things. How might we do things differently next time? What could you do? Again, adjusting it for the age and stage of our children. So we want to reassure them that they are still loved and then move on. Revert back to play or whatever it is that might be happening. When we look at it from the lens of these five things, we're dealing with the behavior in that moment and we're dealing with it in a constructive way, but we're also running alongside this education piece, which then helps our children, equips and tools them up. Because in essence, children don't respond in these huge tantrums indefinitely. They're doing it as a response to a feeling that they've got. And so if we're dealing with the whole package, the idea would be that we should see a shorter duration of these particular periods of them feeling as if they're slightly at the mercy of their big feelings. So just as a quick recap, the five are, we start by understanding the driver behind the behavior. We then add in and address anything which may well be lacking. We work on removing our big emotions from the situation. We get super, super clear in our communication to make that distinction between the behavioral choice and who they are as a person. And then we work through by acknowledging the emotion, the poor choice, and then administering the timeout in terms of number five. Now, my give this week is going to be these top five in that order, because then that should help you in terms of what you need to do at the end, but also the things that we ought to be looking at in advance and running alongside for the education piece. And so that will help you as a reminder, but it also helps you in terms of annotating and practically using as well. So as usual, head over to my free resource library, drmaryhan.com/library, where you'll find the link to download the resource. All you need to do is pop in your email address and you'll get instant access, not only to this week's resource, but all the other free resources across all my podcast episodes. As ever, if you have enjoyed this episode, I would love it and be eternally grateful if you could follow and review this podcast so that others can find us and we can spread the love. So until next time.